You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. Here for you Monday through Friday. This is the Friday show. End of your week. Happy Friday. We're going to get you to your weekend by talking about what's real, what's not from the season opener for the Boston Celtics. They played Philly in Philly. Both Tom Westerholm and I were there. We're back, and we're both here. Tom Westerholm, my partner on MassLive.com. Tom, how you feeling today?
I can't believe we're back at this crap, man.
You know, we wait all summer. And we're like, God, just get basketball back. And then you're sitting there ordering I'm sitting there ordering like a Subway breakfast sandwich, just like – wondering, like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I putting this in my body? And why is this my best option right now? Because we're sitting there in the Wells Fargo Center, just like enjoying the hell out of everything. That's why we do this. But we're back, and Tom and I are going to, we both taken a fresh look, a second look at this game, and we're going to revisit some of the storylines. The Celtics do play Toronto. A couple little notes. Enes Kanter is out. He hurt his knee. A knee contusion does not seem serious at all. He played the rest of the game in Philly. It happened early in the second quarter. But they're calling it a knee contusion. I think they're just being very, very cautious about it. So he's out. Celtics play Toronto at 7 p.m. on Friday night. So here's our look. Let's take a look at what's real, what's not. In the third segment, Jaylen Brown and the rookies. We'll save that for the end. In the second segment, Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker. But in the beginning here, I want to look at the ball movement. And one of the things that I asked Brad Stevens about after the game, and there was a focus before the game, was we got to move these guys around. But he said it. Brett Brown said that he was afraid of them going small. I personally, Tom, I didn't like the level of ball movement. And so I'm the first, what's real, what's not is, was, I guess it's a two-parter for you. Were you happy with the ball movement? And if not, then was the lack of ball movement something that is just going to be a part of this team? What we saw in the first game, I saw a lot of dribbling. And so I'm curious if you saw that and whether you think a lot of that dribbling is going to continue.
So, I mean, there was certainly plenty of dribbling. I actually didn't mind the looks the Celtics got. I agree with you that there wasn't that much ball movement, and that was something that, you know, Brad touched on, and you kind of saw his point when it came to the Sixers, because you figured, you know, the way he put it, he mentioned that you were going to need a second drive. You were going to need, like, you know, passes to the corner. You're going to need crisp ball movement. You're going to need multiple attacks just to create cracks in the defense. Yes. to get your shot up, which makes a lot of sense. But I thought the Celtics got pretty good looks out of the pick and roll, and you know, they ran just high pick and roll after high pick and roll. But a lot, when I watched it the first time through, I didn't think that they got very good looks. And then Kemba after the game talked about how he felt pretty good about most of the shots he took, and that was kind of when I went back and looked, I was like, you know, honestly, I kind of think he had a point. Like, he had a lot of reasonably open, you know, mid-range jumpers out of the pick and roll, and he can hit those, that kind of thing. So I wasn't as worried about the ball movement just because I thought the looks they got against what is going to be a truly elite defense. I thought the looks they got were actually pretty decent. They didn't knock them down. Maybe that was a matter of, you know, first game jitters, being a little tired in the first game, whatever it was. But, you know, so to me, the ball movement wasn't the big issue in last night's game. Because I thought the looks they generated were pretty decent, all things considered.
The looks weren't bad. I thought they got a ton of shots that were makeable. I think there's a little bit of a difference between a makeable shot and a good shot. And a lot of shots are makeable by NBA players. What I really wish I would have seen is the extension from Team USA, Greg Popovich, make your quick decisions. You basically got like a couple of seconds. You're either two dribbles to the basket. You're either shooting, you're passing. What are you doing? Like, and I still saw a little too much. And I'm admitting that my ideal is like Golden State Warriors death lineup, crazy ball movement where the other team has no chance and you're just toying with them by throwing eight passes because three passes earlier would have been a good look, but you're just toying with people. But still,
I also think the Celtics should try to be the greatest team of all time. For that.
Exactly. So I understand I'm holding it to a high standard, but at the same time, that level of passing, it's not, you don't have to be Steph and Dre and KD and Clay to make those passes. Those guys do it better and the finishing is better, but to recognize, and for an NBA player to recognize that this is how a guy's playing, I can drive, or I took two dribbles, I'm going nowhere, give it up. And do something, and then eventually you'll get it back. Like that, I want more of that. And it obviously, it's a super high standard, but I can appreciate Tatum's aggressiveness, and we'll get to Tatum in a second. But I would love to see much more of Tatum taking 2-3 dribbles, saying, "Nope, I don't got it. Give it up," because Kemba has clearly stated that he's not trying to take every shot. Other guys are looking to move the ball. Cut baseline, get a pick, run, some sort of floppy action, come up, catch the ball, and then attack when the defender isn't quite as set. Maybe his momentum's going a different way. And just attack the second time you get the ball. So I know I set the parameters of this game, whether it's real or not, and I don't have an answer whether this is real or not, but I will say that I don't like how much closer the ball movement was to last year's team than it was to this year's expectations. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think that's fair. I'll be curious to see how much it does affect them, but you know, the real for, you know, real, not real. I don't know after, you know, one game if that's real or not real. But, it'll be interesting to see if it is real and if it does continue, how much it does affect them. Because, you know, you could make the case that, okay, it looked like last year's offense, but Gordon Hayward did not look like last year's Gordon Hayward. And you could make the case that adding him into last year's mix, you know, even in that offense still would have been really effective. We'll see. We'll see if it's real or not. I think it's certainly – put it this way, and I think this is about as real as something can get after one game. I think it's worth watching going forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. And Philly, again, is tremendous defensively.
Unbelievable. So, they're going to be so good.
So let's fold Tatum into this. I thought his shot selection was generally pretty good, like where he got to on the floor. And my biggest criticism may be a function of Philly's biggest strength, their size. Yeah. Because I thought that he got a little too cute with some of his finishes. Like, he missed some shots at the rim that I think if you get those shots all 82 games, he's going to have a very good percentage at the rim. But he also took some shots that were sort of getting towards the rim-ish, but he had Ben Simmons on him, and Joel Embiid was behind Simmons, and he was like, I'm just going to fling this sort of fake hook thing up there.
I know exactly the shot you're talking about.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was. I think that was his worst shot of the game by far.
Yeah, and it goes back. That goes back to China and Team USA, because I think he got to the rim a lot in China, but he was a little cutesy with his finishes, and he didn't get a lot of the foul calls. So then he just started to. His reaction was, well, if I'm not getting the fouls, I'm just going to do these sort of same sort of half hooks, kind of throwing it up and get cute. Again, it's one game and it's a normal reaction, but I just would love to see him if not getting to the rim is there, like if he can't get to the rim, then especially, and you know the shot I'm talking about, because there's like 12 seconds left in the shot clock, just pull it back out.
Yeah.
Pull it back out and work it around, or you know, you can do it like a give and go or a dribble handoff, whatever. You can do other things in that scenario. So, I don't know. What was your opinion on that?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that both things can be true, that you can be worried about his finishing, you know, his actual physical finishing. And you can also feel pretty good as a, you know, as somebody watching the Celtics that his shot selection was better, that he was getting to the rim, that he was around, you know, in the vicinity that he should be, and that he was taking threes instead of long twos. I mean, you know, I thought one of the things he did really well was that whenever somebody came flying out at him, instead of letting the person fly by, taking one step in and then taking a 20-foot two, he would, you know, take that step to the side, or even just like pump fake and let them go by and then just take that shot, like from the 3-point line. Like those are all options. They were all options last year, and they would have probably made last year's efficiency a little better. But he's, you know, I thought that was a good thing to see from him. But in terms of, yeah, around the rim, you know, it's, we'll see how much. Like this has been a problem for him, you know, and I mean, you know, he loses the ball sometimes on his way up, and he does, you know, get a little cute with it, or, you know, just blow layups that were very makeable. Like he does do that stuff sometimes. So, you know, I think that as far as real or not real goes, again, that's probably one where you can say it's definitely, you know, something to watch. It could be something that's real, you know, because we saw a lot of it last year, and we know that it has been something that's affected him in the past.
I will say he didn't lose the ball as much on his drives as he has in the past. Like
when he did, he got fouled. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's better. And really the whole point of real and not real and trying to dissect this, is it nitpicky? Yeah. It's totally nitpicky.
Of course it is. We're talking about one game for 40 minutes. We're going to nitpick.
Of course. Like it's totally nitpicky, but you know what? Nitpicking is what they do in film. When those guys sit down with Brad Stevens, they're not glossing over things. Nitpicking is exactly what they do in every film session. So that's kind of what we're doing here. So Tatum, again, I love the fact that he only took like 2 mid-range shots. Of course, one of them was the first damn shot of the season, which was hilarious. But I think he was forced to take one other one. The rest of the shots, I really do think that he did a good job of trying to attack. Now, just dial it up a little bit more. That's all I'm saying about Jason Tatum.
Definitely. And I did want to say that I've been kind of on this train for, you know, a few weeks now that the actual issue with his shots last year wasn't that they were mid-range shots. It was that they were isolation shots, and that when he gets some of those shots out of the pick and roll, it's a lot better. And his first shot of the season was out of the pick and roll. So I was satisfied with it personally, because I've been on this crusade.
Fair enough. All right. We'll leave it on a positive note.
There you go.
One statistic from last night's game. It's for Gordon Hayward that really highlights why Gordon Hayward is back, and that's next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
There's a statistic from last night, or from the season opener. You're listening on Friday, from Wednesday night. It didn't show up in the box score, You have to dig for it. And at Timmy_093 found it, and I'm going to give him perfect credit here for finding that stat. Gordon Hayward had 18 drives in the game against the Sixers. Last year, he averaged 5.7 drives per game. And for comparison, James Harden averaged an NBA high 19.6 drives per game. That's all from Timmy. So, I think that stat is amazing. It's one game, but we're just talking about all of Philly's size. And Hayward got two early fouls. And those are two factors that easily combine to take away anybody's aggressiveness. Yet Hayward drove the ball 18 times in the game and ended up with 25 points. And, you know, a lot of those were driving kicks that either resulted in fouls or didn't result in anything necessarily, but driving the ball is exactly what you want. I'm going to say that that's real. Maybe some of it is hopeful, but the Hayward that we've seen, the aggressive Hayward, that was, I think, a great sign. And I think that's the biggest indicator that Gordon Hayward is actually back, that he was driving the ball, and whether he averages 25 points a game or not, we'll see. But the fact that he was driving and was aggressive is, I think, an amazing sign.
You know, one of the things that I was sitting next to your former friend now, mortal enemy, Jay King, at the game. And one of the things that he – sorry.
Who?
You won't be named. Well, and one of the things that he noticed about Tatum was that Tatum was really carrying himself in a different way. And I think you could say the same thing about Hayward. You know, last year there was just kind of a way about him, the way that he moved and everything, that was just so tentative. And he didn't really have any of that last night. So, and I think that really showed on the drives, was just the extra confidence that he has this year. So I think I'm in agreement with you. I think that that's real. I think that he is going to I think he's much more comfortable and confident right now. And I think that's really going to kind of boost him in the beginning here.
Well, when you look at the injury and the mental toll that kind of injury takes, it's something that he was attacking the basket. He landed on somebody's foot. The worst possible scenario happened. And it's very easy for somebody to say, I'm not going to do that again. And he went in there and did it again. And I think that's a great mental indication that Hayward's just like back to being a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And I really honestly, I don't know how the whole season's going to go, but that alone is a big deal to me. And seeing Hayward back to that level, he took 11 free throws, which is a monster number, and a number that only the Hardens and Westbrooks of the world really tend to achieve. So I'm not going to say that he's going to take 11 free throws a game, but that level of aggressiveness is really a great sign. So I'm going to deem that as real. I will deem not real Kemba Walker's struggles. I've been listening to different people's takes on this. Some of his struggles, like a lot of people were like, well, Philly's defense was awesome. No, I think Philly's defense was really good on him for sure. For sometimes, Thibault did a great job recovering after a rough first half on Kemba, but Kemba got a lot of shots that as I rewatched the game, I thought, geez, he should be making that shot. Or he should be making a decent percentage of those shots. He was 1 of 6 from three. I think maybe 4 of the 5 threes that he missed were easily could have gone down. And that changes the entire dynamic of the game and the entire dynamic of how we look at him. So I think maybe the size was a problem. Maybe it was the moment. Maybe it was just the lack of comfort with everything. But I think Kemba Walker is just going to be fine.
Definitely, yeah. And like I was saying before, you know, the pick and roll opportunities they got were pretty good for most of the game. And especially I thought Kemba's were pretty good because those, you know, again, it's mid-range jumpers, but those are shots that he normally makes. And they're shots that he made last year when he just destroyed the Sixers in that one game that I think Jimmy Butler had the game winner, but Kemba had like 60 or something like that. Just one of those ridiculous Kemba games. But, you know, I think that he's, you know, he's going to really benefit from those pick and roll opportunities. He's going to really benefit from that high pick and roll that they ran a lot. He's going to get great looks. He's not going to keep shooting that badly. Like, you know, let's not be ridiculous here. It was a huge moment for him. I'm sure it was nerve wracking. It's a new system. Like, let's, you know, Philly's crowd is insane. You know, they can shake anybody. We saw it at the free throw line all night. I think Kemba will be fine. I have no worries about that, you know, kind of carrying over whatsoever.
So we're in agreement. We're going to leave it at that. I don't think there's any further analysis there. There is further analysis on Jaylen Brown. And I gave him a little bit of a pass on Wednesday night after the game. A little less so after rewatching it. I know I risk the reputation of becoming the Jaylen hater. It's not true. I like Jaylen Brown. And I'm only going to say what I'm about to say because I think he can be so much better. And I'm going to say that right after the break when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. All right, Tom, I'll just come right out and say it right away. Jaylen Brown's fouls pissed me off. Like, three of them were just super, super, super frustrating. And they were especially frustrating because he had a steal, a layup, and an and one. He had another steal that he couldn't get a handle on when he ripped it, a pass from, I forget who it was, on the way to Al Horford, and they got tangled up and fell. He was disruptive on defense. Like, Jaylen Brown was playing good basketball, but the fouls were so infuriating that I just can't get past them. So the second foul that he got was on an up fake, and the reason it's infuriating is because he keeps falling for up fakes, and it's been a problem for his entire career so far, and it continues to be a problem. The third foul was he was fighting over a screen, and I think Tobias Harris took a jump shot, and Jaylen was way out of position, yet he still tried to block a shot from way out of position. It was a bad decision. And then his fourth foul, which really hurt him, he was in position. Josh Richardson had driven past Grant Williams, who, again, got blown by on the perimeter. And Jaylen slid over, was in a good position, and then he just put his hands out forward. And two hands to Josh Richardson's chest instead of putting his hands up to challenge a shot and dissuade him from shooting. And that was maybe one of the dumbest fouls I've ever seen. And
especially given how many he had in the situation.
Hit three fouls in the second quarter. Like, where's your recognition? And that's why I'm frustrated, because it's a lack of focus. And I'll go back to my old coach who used to tell me, when I yell at you and when I get pissed at you, it's because I know you can be so much better. It's when I don't yell at you that you should be worried, because when you screw up and I don't yell at you, it means I think that's the best that you can be. And that's not good. So I think Jaylen Brown can be so much better. And side note, once you get $100 million contract, you're going to get a little extra focus on things like this. So you better be ready for that. So I don't know, Tom, when we talk about real or fake, this has been like 3 years of Jaylen making silly mental errors like this. And that's the one thing that I'm really struggling with. Like, at what point does Jalen start to get past these times on the floor where he kind of gets a little glazed look in his eye and he's like, kind of, I don't know, not present in the moment?
No, it's true. And it's a fair point. I will say, I mean, he has played a lot of minutes before and not picked up like four fouls in like 8 minutes.
So, oh, of I mean, course.
Clearly,
sure.
Clearly there was something different last night. It's not like this is, you know, an every night thing, but I think you're absolutely right. And I think the pump fakes are always funny to me because, you know, he's so athletic that I'm sure he feels like he can block a lot of those shots. But for the most part, when you're closing out or when you're in that situation, you're not going to actually get the block. You're just trying to contest. So like, it's just kind of funny to watch. Like it feels like he thinks he can get the block, even though it's that you just don't block those shots. You're just trying to contest them. And if he just did that, if he just added that part to his defense of staying down and just contesting, it would make him a lot more dangerous because he wouldn't be so foul prone. And, you know, it would honestly be more effective. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that the concerns are fair. You know, and I think that, again, something to monitor. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be as protracted as it was two nights ago, obviously, but it is something that I think is fair to worry about, especially like you said, when $100 million, you know, $103 million guaranteed have just been awarded.
Yeah, and it's more, I think, with Jalen, when things are going great, he's fine. When things start to go south for him, and yeah, obviously, he's not going to have five fouls in 20 minutes or whatever. Like, that's, I understand that. But when things start to not go his way, I think maybe his biggest challenge as a basketball player may not be the stuff that I've talked about here, where it's like, well, does Jalen see the play two, three levels down like other guys do? Maybe that's not his biggest challenge. The biggest challenge for Jalen Brown may actually be when things aren't going his way, can he block out that noise and make, as Brad Stevens says, the next right play? Because Jalen wasn't making the next right play. He was making the next wrong play when he was fouling. And again, he was doing a lot of other things well. And part of why the Celtics lost is because Jalen wasn't out on the floor, and Jalen's a super important guy and he's really, really good at basketball. But mentally, I think he gets in his own way. And so he's a young guy, but that's part of what I saw. I'll leave that there because also mentally with young guys, we saw Carson Edwards, Grant Williams. I don't think Grant had that blow by in the play that I was talking. Grant was okay. Like he was just kind of like there. I think Carson is somebody.
Quick side note on Grant. I thought it was hilarious that he pissed off both Horford and Embiid in like literally the span of like 2 minutes just by hip checking them.
Absolutely.
Like, just they were so mad and like, yeah, you understand it. He's a rookie. Like, why is he throwing his hips around like that?
Yeah, he leveled. Well, not leveled, but he caught Embiid right in the gut with an attempted box out. I think there was a little elbow in there too, but it dropped Embiid to a knee. That's Grant. Like, that's just going to be how Grant is. He's not like at like KG was the master of being like nice guy who just hit a switch and became a different person. Grant has a long way to go, but there's a little bit of switch flipping, I think, with Grant when basketball comes around.
There definitely is.
But Carson, I'm not picking on the guy because he's an awesome shooter. He's too good a shooter to miss by like 3 feet, which he did on his first shot. So when we talk about real or not, it's obviously not real, but he missed his first couple of shots badly. And so I think we can say that Carson Edwards was maybe a little too juiced up for his NBA debut.
I think that is real.
That's real.
There's no question about that. I mean, his first shot was hilarious because it was like you completely understood how that happens. Like,
oh my God.
Like, if you are in an NBA game and it is your first NBA game, I am launching that thing into the third row, like from in front of the basket, like it's going over the backboard. Yeah, I mean, it was just really funny to watch, like, because it was just very relatable. And he went out there and it's like, well, the Celtics really need his floor spacing. And you just kind of knew, like, yeah, but he's probably not giving floor spacing tonight. Like, it's a rookie's first game. It was kind of cool. It was kind of cool to see, you know, he got his first basket. He'll be fine. He's going to start making them very soon.
I hope that he has like a really long career, like just a career where you can have like a retrospective. And,
yeah.
And somebody talks to him. And it's like, do you remember your first shot in the NBA? And he's gonna be like, yeah, I missed by like 3 feet long. Like, it was the worst shot I've ever taken in my life. And you could see it, like, his first two shots were long. And I think it was his third shot that he missed short. Like, he totally overcompensated.
Yep.
And by the end, like, he hit his last shot of the game. So
he did.
By then, I mean, the game was over and he could relax. It's just, I bring it up seriously not to bust Carson's balls, because I'm with you. If I was out there at that point, like, I don't know if I would have even gotten close in shooting that first shot. He's eventually going to settle into being a phenomenal shooter, because that's what he is. He's a phenomenal shooter. But just goes to show that nerves and anxiety and all of that stuff just plays into that first touch. Like, Carson has been throughout our brief interactions, I think you would agree, he's been like a pretty cool customer.
Yeah.
With all of us. Like, we keep trying to ask him questions. He's like, nah, it's not a big deal. You know, like, oh, you hit 53s in a row. He's like, yeah, but I made mistakes. But in that moment, I'm sure he's probably like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. I'm an NBA player.
Well, yeah. And I mean, he admitted that to me before, like, the game. I asked him, like, are you nervous? And he's like, well, yeah, but like, I get nervous before every game because they all matter to me. Like, I want to do well. It was actually, I thought it was kind of a cool sentiment, like, because most of the time, you know, NBA players don't like to admit that they're nervous. And he was just kind of like, yeah, man, like, these games really matter to me. Like, I want to win them. So I'm kind of nervous before them. So, you know, obviously this was, I'm sure this was even more nerves than usual. And I think that showed, because the usual nerves still allow him to make 3-pointers. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was kind of cool that he, you know, that a rookie before his first game was just, you know, kind of willing to admit that, like, listen, this is a big deal for me, and I'm really excited to get out there.
Yeah. I mean, every player gets nervous. Well,
that's the thing. Everybody does.
I mean, I got nervous. You got nervous. Bill Russell threw up before games. Like,
yeah.
So every player on every level is, I'm going to make sure that I wasn't saying me and you and Bill Russell in the same sentence. I was making sure that I was saying that we're the low end of the totem pole and he's on the opposite end. So from players like us all the way up to Bill Russell, let me make sure I'm clear on that everybody gets nervous playing basketball, but making your NBA debut, obviously. So I'm curious to see how he does now. Now he goes to his home opener, and if he's going to be more comfortable playing at home with the crowd around him, or less comfortable, or whatever. I think now that he's gotten his taste, maybe he can settle into his role, but be interesting to see. Celtics, Raptors, Friday night, 7:00, and then back to back, they go to New York for Saturday night, and I will be at both of those games, and then we'll talk about that on the Monday show. So subscribe to the show if you haven't done that already. You'll get me, you'll get Tom from time to time. You get other guests in from time to time. So varying voices and all of that stuff on the show. So please subscribe. All of you who have a 5-star rating and a good written review would be very much appreciated. Really helps the show out. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.